This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hulu. Based on shocking true events, the new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, tells the story of a savage murder in a small town. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
There are many Barbies. There's a Dr. Barbie, a lawyer Barbie, a President Barbie, and so on.
Well, the Barbie we're talking about today is the Barbie that spoils the new Barbie movie. I'm Linda Holmes.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. In this spoiler-packed episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we are talking about Barbie.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
From your car radio to your smart speaker, NPR meets you where you are in a lot of different ways. Now we're in your pocket. Download the NPR app today.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Why did Cola Scola write a bonkers, extremely fictionalized play about Mary Todd Lincoln?
Well, you know, it was 2020 and we were all so isolated. I just started doing research. But the truth is, I just thought of it.
We'll talk about that and more on Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. Across the NPR network, we report rigorously on the forces seeking to disrupt democracy and provide communities with reliable information. It's Public Media Giving Days. The perfect time to stand with the facts by donating now at donate.npr.org. Thank you.
With us today is our fellow co-host, Aisha Harris. Hey, Aisha.
The patriarchy.
We're going to talk about the patriarchy. Also with us is film critic and culture journalist Badatri D. Chaudhry. Welcome back, Badatri.
Thank you so much. And if you hear me heavy breathing, it's the sigh of relief because I can talk with spoilers now.
Finally, we can be our truest selves. So in Friday's episode, we gave our spoiler-free thoughts on the new and very hotly anticipated Barbie movie, which is directed and co-written by Greta Gerwig. Long story short, we enjoyed the heck out of it, albeit with some reservations. We adored the way it looked, and we greatly enjoyed the performances, especially those of Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling, who play Barbie and Ken. But we really couldn't discuss some of the weirder plot twists, some of the gags that stood out, and at least one perfectly selected song, so we figured we'd give Barbie the spoiler special it deserves. So the marketing materials for the Barbie movie reveal that the central conflict arises when the most stereotypically blonde and perky Barbie, played by Margot Robbie, finds herself facing an existential crisis. She lives in her dream house in Barbieland, but she thinks about death. Her heels suddenly touch the ground. She finds the first traces of cellulite. She even sheds tears. Soon, for various reasons, she heads off in search of her human owner, taking a journey from Barbieland to Los Angeles. She is joined along the way by Ryan Gosling's Ken. When Barbie and Ken arrive in the human world, they find a very different society than the Barbie-centric one they're used to. So I guess the place I'd like to start is there, specifically in the depiction of Ken. It is a running gag in Barbie that Ken himself is a blank slate and an add-on. He doesn't have much of a backstory of his own. His job, as the movie points out to great comedic effect, is, and I quote, beach. So when he and Barbie travel to the human world, he gets his first ever glimpse of the patriarchy, and he likes what he sees. This leads us to his hostile takeover of Barbieland. So let's start there and talk about what the heck is going on with Ken, our weird washboard ab incel king. Badatri, kick us off with your thoughts.
I mean, what can I say? He really loves horses. Can you blame him? But I mean, he's actually such, you know, in modern day parlance, such a soft boy. Like, you know, he just wants to be loved. And which is why he's like doing all these very disgusting and wrong things. And again, like, you know, we talked about how we feel complicated in our feelings about this film. And I wonder, it's very fun. And Ryan Gosling has said in an interview that he was born to play Ken. And I agree 100%.
Yes.
But again, like, what part of his narrative arc is the film actually glorifying? Definitely not the incel king part of it. That part is like so ridiculous that it's funny. But again, in the end of it, you know, what I liked was most films have the women going on this journey of self-discovery. But here, it's like, you know, Ken needs to go on that, which is somewhat appreciated. But then I'm also like, where is the retribution for all this havoc and really bad things that he brought into this very pink, very plastic, beautiful world?
Yeah, you know, I agree with Badatri. I think it's very funny. And I definitely think the portrayal of Ken and really all the Kens, when they go into this, we are going to be in charge now. Because, you know, at the beginning of the movie, you really see that they live in service to all the Barbies, essentially. And when Ken goes and discovers what it's like for men to be in charge of everything, he says, well, this is great. And he comes back and he imports it. I do think the portrayal of how those guys act when they really sort of allow themselves to wallow in their dudosity is extremely funny. This maybe is where we can talk about the fact that at one point they all serenade their Barbies with Matchbox 20's Push.
A great song. A great song. I love this song.
They play the guitar at them.
Yes.
They play the guitar at them, as they say. That definitely got me howling. You know, it's a very sweet portrayal by Gosling. Like, sweet dummy is kind of a classic funny way that guys like this can sometimes act. James Marsden has done similar things.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, like, these guys get pretty hateful in the sense that they kind of want to take everything away and run the government and kick these Barbies out of their houses. He just hasn't come to terms with the fact that Barbie doesn't love him. And if she patiently explains to him that she doesn't love him, then he sort of comes around and he's like, okay. And, you know, I have a certain unease about whether that's really what guys who act like this actually need. Is it that they're sad and they need a journey of self-discovery? You know, the ultimate answer turns out to be like, distract them long enough to vote. If you think about it too hard, it's very unsatisfying. But if you don't think about it too hard, it's actually very funny, and there are some really fun jokes. I admire Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach for throwing in a joke about the Snyder Cut. Like, you're definitely poking the bear.
Yeah, I mean, look, can I posit a theory that perhaps part of the, I don't know if it's the problem with the movie or just something that I found a little weird to think about it, is the fact that Ken is kind of a slightly more interesting character than Barbie in this movie, perhaps unintentionally so. Yes, obviously, the whole joke is that he's, you know, inconsequential, basically. Even if Ken's arc at the end feels a little bit old-fashioned and kind of basic in a way, I do think that he still has a little bit more to play with as a character, because his whole deal is just, like, patriarchy, and then Barbie's whole deal is way more complicated because she has to deal with Mattel and this idea of what she's supposed to be versus what she actually has been received as. And the whole Mattel thing is very like, oh, these are my corporate overlords and I'm going to poke fun at them, but I'm not going to poke too hard or enough that like they're not going to approve of this. Whereas Ken is just patriarchy, and that's something you can more easily rib. The fact that he gets an entire dream ballet, the dream ballet, which is very Bob Fosse, Gene Kelly, I should set up. So towards the end of the film, all the Kens have turned on each other because all the Barbies have pitted them against each other. And so there's this whole beach battle scene where different Kens are going after different Kens. It's very funny. And then, like, that scene turns into, within it, a dream ballet sequence where all the Kens are dancing together and Ryan Gosling's Ken is singing about being I'm just Ken. And to me, like, not that Barbie doesn't have her own moments, but a whole dream ballet is a very, in any sort of musical or movie, it's supposed to be the heart of the movie. It's like mm-hmm. the moment where everything kind of changes and you see this sort of shift from the first part of the show or the movie to the last part. And so, I don't know, do we think that his arc was a little bit more interesting? I do.
The effect that I had wasn't necessarily thinking that Ken was more interesting, but thinking that Ken, they do more weird stuff with Ken and are, I think, a little bit more experimental in the way they present Ken
right. In
a way that does give you some higher highs. But I do think that Ken also is the factor that causes this movie to drag the most
yes. When
it drags. Mm. Now, I'm not necessarily the first person who's like, yes, there's a dream ballet. but like the dream ballet for me was like, get back to the movie. This is weird. Get back to the movie.
You know what? Every dream ballet in every movie ever has been that for some people.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's
there
true.
Are people where, like, that's the Singing in the Rain they want to get out of the dream ballet. Yeah. There are people where in Oklahoma they want to get out of the dream ballet.
Yeah, very common.
There are people who are like, I stopped watching American in Paris before the super famous part. You know? Gosling gets to play a broader and more comedic kind of sympathetic character. Robbie is playing a more poignant sympathetic character. Mm-hmm. And I was really wondering where they were going to leave her. Was she going to become like self-aware Barbie? And then when was she ever going to be able to be happy? And because when you get to the end of the film, she really winds up concluding, I don't want this life as perfect Barbie, which, you know, might seem predictable in a way because, you know, the person's always going to, I want to be a real boy or whatever. But the toys in Toy Story live happily as toys. There's not necessarily a guarantee you can't live happily as a toy. But I think the decision that they ultimately have her make about kind of, I want to try out the life of a human, and heaven knows that's been done. But I think that she really acts the heck out of the end of this movie, I think, despite the fact that these are beats I've seen before. There is a moment fairly deep into this movie where she has discovered malaise, really. She's kind of discovered sadness. And it's almost like her discovery of sadness really foundationally changes who she is. And there is a moment where I think Margot Robbie snaps out of the pink Barbie-ness. And you really suddenly feel like you are seeing this terrific actor play a really sensitive scene where she's playing a person. And it's almost like Barbie discovers less that she wants to be a person and more that she has become a person and has to now deal with the outcomes of being a person.
Yeah.
A couple of those scenes with Robbie kind of in the weird Barbie house with Kate McKinnon. God bless Kate McKinnon, man.
Oh, my God.
You know, yes. I could watch Kate McKinnon do essentially this performance in 400 movies and be totally happy.
Yeah, she can keep doing splits all her life and I'll be very happy.
She's wonderful in this.
Yep.
Some of those scenes where Barbie is kind of going through that crisis in the weird Barbie house with the other Barbies and with the America Ferrera character and her daughter, I actually think a bunch of that is quite moving.
So counterpoint to my last point.
Aisha versus Aisha.
So what if Barbie is like the sly critique of white cis heteroprogressivism in a post-Black Lives Matter, post-Me Too, post-Love is Love world? In this essay, I will note. So to your point, Linda, I think one of the things that I sort of picked up on is that there are moments, especially those scenes with Kate McKinnon, where Barbie has this moment where she's talking about, oh, I'm stereotypical Barbie. I'm the first thing that you think of, like when you think of Barbie. And to me, that was kind of a really interesting point because it kind of goes counter to what the movie is trying to promote in a way, which is that everyone can be Barbie, regardless of their size, regardless of their race, whatever. But then you have stereotypical Barbie. The movie is focused on stereotypical Barbie and it's kind of calling out, yeah, we have all these things, but I'm still the main Barbie. There's also a moment where she has an option. Weird Barbie, played by Kate McKinnon, gives her two options to like go and decide what she's going to do. She's going to go to the real world and like confront her feelings. And she's holding up, you know, Birkenstocks. And then the other one is a heel. And Margot Robbie's like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to know. I want to be kind of oblivious to all of this. And I saw that as sort of a sly critique of, you know, kind of this.
I think that's definitely there.
Yeah, which is like that she has been perfect. She has been the stereotype. But now she's realizing that actually I maybe want to do something with my life and not rest on these feelings. So I don't know. As much as I said earlier, Ken maybe is the more interesting one. I do think that her journey and her arc, while also kind of basic, does still have an undertone of a little bit of subversiveness that I think you have to like look more closely to find. It's not quite as obvious, but I think it's there.
I'm just going to push back on your, I want to see that essay, Aisha, first.
Yes.
But this film is so binary. It's 2023 and it's so pink and blue in terms of like everything, in terms of the marketing around it. Again, the blue of Oppenheimer and the pink of Barbie. It's like, you know, everything around it is so based on the gender binary and it does not move. That's always there. Boys do this, girls do this. And that made me a little uncomfortable. So I will chill on that a little bit. But again, to your point, Aisha, like, you know, this film does, and many people will see the faults in it and many people will see the prizes in it, but it does diversity exactly the way Mattel does diversity.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. Except for the fact that, may I say, there is a wonderful plus size actress in this movie named Sharon Rooney, who people may know from My Mad Fat Diary and other things, who plays one of the Barbies. And they have made the Barbie body types moderately more inclusive, but I do not think that they have made them that inclusive. So that kind of irritated me a little bit. That is not reality, and I wish it were.
I agree with you. And then again, like, and this is both the frustration and the delight of this film. It makes you feel like it's constantly criticizing itself, but you as a viewer want more of it. But then they cut you short and be like, no, this is it. Even the, you know, the Mattel CEO says this, oh, this will sell. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how, you know, the enterprise has looked at diversity.
Well, the other thing I will say is that the fact that at the end, Barbie talks to Ken and now he's okay with not being, she's honest with him, I guess. She's no longer, quote unquote, stringing him along, which in itself is like, really? This is okay.
It's right on the line.
Right on the line. But then it's like, okay, none of these Barbies seem interested in the Ken. So can we like maybe push this a little bit further and say maybe actually they're not into men at all? Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Or like, if you're a doctor or if you're a president, if you're a lawyer, if you're all these things, I'd like to see you be a doctor and not just, and that's the problem with the doll, right?
Well, the doctor does fix Ken after he wipes out on the beach.
Yes, sure.
But your point is, yes, makes sense.
Yeah.
We are kind of brushing up against an interesting point about this movie and about what this movie could have been had they opted to go this way and opted to be a little less binary. When I mentioned that we were going to record a spoiler special to my partner, Katie, who was very excited about this film and hasn't yet seen it, she was like, please tell me Barbie is queer. Please tell me they explore that.
Sorry, Katie. Yeah.
And they really don't.
No.
They really don't. And for, I think, as much queer buy-in as there is to this movie going into it, there's a lot of unexplored territory. And obviously, the odds of a sequel are not zero. There's a lot more terrain left to explore, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the thing that I took away from this is that the relationship that is kind of posited by Mattel between the Kens and the Barbies is that the Kens are the Barbies' boyfriends. And I think what the Barbies are kind of saying is that they're not really concerned about their romantic lives at all. Mm-hmm. And I think, as Aisha said, I think it's sort of like they're not into the Kens at all. They're not into men at all. They're not into each other at all romantically. And I think one of the things that the film is sort of positing is like, maybe the romantic part of it really only works, you know, if you buy a Barbie and you have a Barbie and you play with a Barbie, maybe it really does only work if you think of Ken as kind of an unnecessary add-on or like an outfit. Like, Ken is the equivalent of an outfit. Today, I want to play with Barbie dressed up like an Olympic ice skater. Shout out to the Barbie that I had. And tomorrow, I want to play with Barbie with a camper van and a boyfriend. And it's sort of like the Barbies are interested in themselves and their own lives as Barbies. The Kens are accessories. They are.
Yes.
And at the end, they're going back to living as accessories. And I do want to say, I think the other really charming performance that I think we haven't talked about at all is Michael Cera as Alan, who was a real doll, who was kind of Ken's friend. And they show a bunch of the Barbies at the end of the movie. They show a bunch of what I think are all real Barbies and real Barbie marketing. at the end of the movie. And the stuffer Alan basically says he fits into all Ken's clothes, which I think is the funniest little thing. Like, buy this doll, he could wear the other doll's clothes. And I did enjoy all the little shout outs to various different Barbie iterations that have been discontinued, including the magic earring Ken. Speaking of speaking of kind of queer text and subtext, magic earring Ken and sugar daddy Ken.
Sugar daddy Ken.
Plus the one I was really going into this thinking, I hope they talk about the Skipper doll where when you put her arm over her head, her bust grows. And they did. And that was a real doll. And I remember that marketing.
My soul was crying out for a Rosie O'Donnell cameo because there is a Rosie O'Donnell Barbie in the late 90s. Oh, but they did pass on the opportunity to include Rosie for whatever reason. I'm glad you mentioned Michael Cera as Alan, because one thing that I really took away from this film that I don't usually take away from live action movies is, boy, you really could do a series of very funny, very wonderful Pixar-style shorts with some of the ancillary characters in this film, the way they do with Pixar movies. You could do a 7-minute Alan episode, like a freestanding short film, and I would watch the absolute hell out of it. And it's one of the benefits that you get from this movie being as wonderfully well cast as it is. Yeah. There are so many funny ancillary characters, in many cases played by very, very big name talented people that I wanted to see more of, that don't necessarily need more airtime in Barbie, but that I would love to see little short films of.
No, I would like to see 4 hours of the Ken movie starring Kingsley Benadire, not 7 minutes.
Kingsley Benadire, who plays Malcolm X in One Night in Miami and is so good in it, is just like one of the Kens here.
Didn't he also play Obama?
Yeah.
And he's also about to play Bob Marley. So he's basically played all the iconic figures of the 20th century.
And Ken.
Yes.
And Ken.
Yeah. He's our cultural forefather. Yes. And also what I love about Alan is, and which is where I thought Greta Gerwig was being Greta Gerwig, is that nuance in friendship, in allyship, that like, I have your back no matter what happens, Francis Ha friendship. And I saw a peak of that in Alan. And I mean, he's really one of my favorite characters.
Love Alan.
Justice for Alan.
I think he's super funny in this. Absolutely in the pocket in terms of a Michael Cera performance. The weird thing about this movie is that, yes, it's a toy movie. Yes, it's a Mattel movie. Yes, it's been so heavily marketed that you honestly feel like you're postal carrier is going to come to the door in an all pink uniform and be like, here to deliver the Barbie mail, because it just doesn't feel like you can get away from it. But if that weren't true, this is a live action comedy. You know, more than anything else, this is a live action comedy with this kind of sweet ending. I do really like the ending where she meets up with Rhea Perlman playing the inventor of the Barbie doll. Oh. I like how that plays out. I think it's really sweet. I really like the montage at the end where she kind of is introduced to how life really works. It all comes down, I think, to how you feel about the moment when Margot Robbie as Barbie is talking about how you feel like you're not pretty enough. And Helen Mirren, as the narrator, comes on and says, a note to the filmmakers, Margot Robbie is not the person to cast if you want to make this point. And it is the movie doing a thing and also like hanging a sign on the thing that they're doing, saying that they're doing it. And it is like, is that better? I don't know if it's better.
I laughed.
You know what that scene is? That scene is Wayne and Garth talking about product placements and holding up a bag of Doritos in Wayne's World.
I didn't mind that. I laughed. Oh, I did too.
I did too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but you're right. Your mileage may vary about that. To me, that was one of the less egregious, like, signposting while patting yourself on the back for calling something out. But
I agree with Aisha. Yes.
All right. Well, I think we're going to leave it there.
Are you sure? I could go on.
I could too.
I want to push you around.
Yes, shout out to Ryan Gosling's Matchbox 20 impression, which is very good.
He's got a great voice.
He does.
Great
voice. Yeah.
I wanted to stand up and applaud.
Yep, absolutely.
We want to know what you think about Barbie. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Linda Holmes, Aisha Harris, Badatri D. Chaudhry, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
This episode was produced by Mike Katzeff and Anna Isaacs and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello Come In provides our theme music. I'm Stephen Thompson, and we will see you all later this week.
I wanna push you way around when I will, when I will.
Sorry, sorry.
Is it possible to engineer our way out of the climate crisis? Some entrepreneurs want to shoot particles into the stratosphere to combat global warming. Experts say regulations on this technology aren't keeping up. The world of solar geoengineering on the latest episode of The Sunday Story from NPR's Up First podcast.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
Listen to Embedded for moments that stay with you.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Voices that resonate. Stories that change the way you think about your life.
How did we get here?
The Embedded podcast is NPR's home for original documentary series. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.